Obviously, the untimely passing of Philip Seymour Hoffman is bringing more light to the issue of heroin addiction and prescription drug addiction. And it's been a pervasive issue for some time now. And in the medical community in particular, there's been a lot of concern regarding the increase in prescription drug abuse as it pertains to issues around chronic pain. So we obviously know that it's been an ongoing issue. His passing, of course, just exacerbated more awareness about what's going on nationally with this epidemic. Locally here, and again, I'll have to probably defer a little bit to Kelly because she's got a lot of the local statistics in regards to what we're seeing. I know at Lakeview, we are seeing a substantial number of our patients that are coming through our program that are addicted to prescription drugs and heroin. And some of them, of course, came off of prescription drugs and taking heroin because it's cheaper to get and it's easier to access. And so what we're seeing statistically is that there is definitely an increase in heroin and prescription drug abuse in this area.
And they start with the legally prescribed pills, and then they might switch to the street version of the drug. Kelly, of the Skeeterhawk experiment, we're talking about OxyContin, Vicodin, and Percocet. They are killing Americans at more than five times the rate that heroin is, correct?
Correct. And I just wanted to back up for a moment and answer the question about what are opiates. And they're a class of narcotic drugs that are derived from the opium poppy plant or synthetic versions of it, and primarily used for pain relief. But they also affect parts of the brain that can create a euphoric effect. And so what we are learning is this intersection of prescription opiate addictions, then leading back and forth with the misuse of use of heroin. And particularly in Medical Examiner District 4, which is largely comprised of Duval, we have seen a resurgence in heroin.
How much?
2012 are the last data that we have from our Medical Examiner. And there were 10 deaths that list heroin as a cause of death in Medical Examiner District 4 in 2012. That's compared with only two in 2011 and only one in 2010. So although the raw numbers are still low, we are seeing a significant percentage increase. At a state level, we're also seeing that resurgence in heroin. 108 deaths in the state of Florida were caused by heroin. This is in 2012, and this is compared to only 57 in 2011.
And to our callers, do you have a loved one who takes OxyContin, Vicodin, or Percocet, maybe has become addicted? We're discussing the heroin and opiate epidemic in this country this morning. Give us a call with your thoughts and feedback. We'll go to the phones in just a moment. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Gina, Hoffman, the actor, had gone to rehab. Mm-hmm. He had gone and gotten clean. Mm-hmm. But his death was illustrative, I think, of how incredibly addictive this drug is and how hard it is to get off of it. Why is that?
Well, the nature of addiction as a whole is a brain disease. It compromises the ability for people to make decisions. And so whether it's prescription drugs, opiates, heroin, cocaine, any mood-altering intoxicant is going to have a direct effect on the brain. So, and that's one of the reasons why this disease is so pervasive and so highly relapsive. So while he was in recovery for a substantial amount of time, there are circumstances that can come up in people's lives. And if they don't have the appropriate wraparound services and support services in place to help them, they could feasibly go back to their old coping skills, which in many cases could be prescription drugs or, mm-hmm. or whatever their drug of choice might be. So yes, it is incredibly addictive and very painful for a lot of folks to deal with. But we also know that recovery is possible, and he lived it for a very long time. And recovery is an everyday, day-by-day, minute-by-minute kind of experience.
Kelly Corridor, your nonprofit, the Skeeterhawk Experiment, is working on a number of initiatives to help addicts and to raise awareness. Can you tell us what your mission's all about? And in particular, you're going to be hopefully exhibiting at the April One Spark Festival. Tell us about the project you're working on.
Sure. The Skeeterhawk Experiment is a 501c3 organization that I founded in only March of last year. And I did this after learning that more than one individual in my life had been battling with prescription drug addictions. Our mission is to end the scourge of prescription drug misuse through the testing of innovative community-based solutions. And our One Spark project is called Dragonfly Revival. This is a pilot opiate overdose prevention project that we're working with physicians at UF Health Gainesville on training chronic pain patients and overdose recognition and rescue skills, and including possibly the first take-home naloxone program in the state of Florida.
What is naloxone, and how does this piece work?
Sure. Naloxone is a prescription medication, but it's not a controlled substance. It has no abuse potential. It's a short-acting opiate receptor blocker that counteracts the effects of an opiate overdose. So the way opiates work on the brain is that they attach to opiate receptors. And part of it is they can have a sedation effect and slow down respiration. And on the onset of an overdose, that could happen over a 1 to 3 hour period. And if naloxone is administered during that time frame, you can actually bring someone back to life and restart their breathing. Paramedics carry it in the state of Florida. But so far, doctors have been reluctant to prescribe it. And it's about educating physicians that this is a prescription medication that could be saving their patients' lives.
And Why are they reluctant?
I think there is just a hesitancy sometimes on what the message is to a patient when you're prescribing them a drug.
They see it as enabling the patient?
They see that as what is the message being sent, that you may fail, that you may relapse, that you may take too much of a medication. But we see it as improving the dialogue between doctors and patients on acknowledging the serious risks of taking prescription opiates and being there so that if you do fall, we are there for you and that we care about your life to the very end.
Here's a tweet from a listener. Although addiction can lead to criminal behavior, it's a disease, not a crime, and should be treated as such. The tension over that is part of the problem, isn't it, Gina?
It is. It's a stigma. It's an ongoing stigma. We face it on a daily basis when we have folks coming into our ERs or into our prison systems who are struggling with this disease. And because there's so much collateral damage that's tied to it, there's a substantial amount of negativity around it. But people forget that there has been 20 plus years of science that has been able to demonstrate that addiction is just like any other chronic progressive disease that, if not managed or treated, could be fatal.
And let's go to your calls right now. Did you follow the death of Oscar-winning actor Philip Seymour Hoffman? He was a heroin addict. It's not just street heroin that's an epidemic in this country, but also prescription medication. It might even be in your medicine cabinet. OxyContin, Vicodin, or Percocet. Do you have a loved one struggling with this? We want your calls right now. 549-2937. Let's go to Andrew on the South Side. Hi, Andrew. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. It's Andy Kordek. I ran for school board member.
Oh, hi. Yes. Hello.
Hi. My mother-in-law was an addiction therapist, and she since passed, but we used to have lots of conversations about this topic. My brother-in-law, her son, was involved in drug court. He's a public defender in Ormond Beach. My question is, and I'll take my answer off the air, is, there are choices that we make in life, and, Mr. Hoffman, for whatever reason, decided to go down that road, and sometimes it's because we're addicted to it. I myself had to take morphine while I was recovering from knee surgery, and I know that these things can be addictive, but I choose to stay away from them as much as I can, but again, what is it that causes us to choose to go down that road? And some of it has to do with our lifestyle that we choose. And unfortunately, we don't know whether I guess he was addicted to it, but, he's also in an environment that is pervasive in, utilizing or choosing to be part of an environment that, people make bad choices. So I'll take my answer off here. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Andrew. And so let's talk about that, Gina. Some people are more genetically susceptible to addiction than others.
That's correct.
Let's explain that, because I do believe that many agree with Andrew that, look, you chose to take the drug. Mm-hmm. It's your fault if you become addicted to the drug.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's actually a very common perception of the disease, and truly the first time somebody takes the drugs or they and we see a lot of people that come through our program that have had a history of chronic pain issues that didn't wake up one day and say I want to be a drug addict. They end up as a result of years of chronic pain to find themselves addicted to these narcotics. Yes, there are some genetic predisposition factors that can contribute to people. If you have a longstanding history of addiction in your family, direct relations with family members who have had problems with drugs and alcohol, you have a higher propensity. But we don't use that as an excuse with patients that we work with at our facility, because ultimately they have to be in control. They have to decide. And that's going to have to involve a long-time recovery network of support. To speak to his question in regards to environment, we always say that people, places, and things need to change when you're working with people in recovery. So if you've spent a substantial amount of time in an environment where you were surrounded by certain people and places that are going to contribute to your drug use, then all of that's going to have to change. And he obviously functioned in an environment where it was very easy to get. He didn't fall back on his recovery principles. He wasn't probably going into meetings. He wasn't surrounding himself with other recovering folks. He didn't ask for help. And that's probably another big part of it. And so it's a painful process, but if you don't work a program, then you can easily fall down the rabbit hole.
Kelly Corridor.
Harvard's John Kelly was recently asked the question, is addiction a choice? And what he goes on to say is that addiction is like many other medical illnesses, and it is an interaction between genetics and environment. And this makes some of us more susceptible to addiction. For example, a lot of people are exposed to alcohol in our culture, but not everyone becomes addicted to alcohol. And so although some of us like to pat ourselves on the back a little bit that we escaped addiction because we made good choices, it may be that we're just genetically lucky to a certain extent. How many of the listeners on this call have actually tried alcohol before the age of 21 but never became addicted? Some people make bad choices and come out okay, and some don't.
Rob in St. Augustine. Thanks for holding, Rob. Good morning, Rob.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to discuss earlier, you mentioned this addiction to be more than a disease, and I completely agree. As someone who is now my best friend, who was a stranger to me not even 6 months ago, he is a coworker, and you know I'm 21, so getting drunk or getting high or getting getting the fix is kind of a point of pride for some people. And this friend of mine, he was telling me about, oh yeah, man, I did like 4 Vicodin the other day, and I stopped him in his tracks. I said, man, you could die from that. And he had no clue, and he told me he didn't want to hear that because he wanted to enjoy himself. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. So, the more we discussed it, the more I asked him about him, why he was doing this, and the more I sat him down, I heard his story and his broken family, his broken heart, and he gave his heart to some woman, and she completely rejected him, and all these things were the drugs were his cure for his own depression.
Yeah.
And no one had ever heard his story before. And it was, when I sat him down and talked with him, I learned a lot about him that day, and he seems to be a lot better now. He doesn't do Vicodin anymore. He doesn't get high or drunk every day. And I mean, I just got to say that it is a disease and it needs to be cured with psychological help.
Thank you, Mike. Mike makes a great point in that so often people turn to these substances because they're in either physical pain, Gina, mm-hmm. or emotional pain.
Mm-hmm. We feel very strongly that this is a feeling disease, and many of our patients that come through our program have spent years deflecting and denying the issues that they're facing, and they've developed a very unhealthy set of coping skills to deal with those issues. And so what we do and what many facilities do around the country and programs is they try to provide healthy coping skills. So things that you and I would have no problem being able to manage might be more difficult for other people, so they'll resort mm-hmm. to alcohol and other drugs to cope.
Lots of calls, meanwhile. If you follow the recent death of Oscar-winning actor Philip Seymour Hoffman and his apparent struggles with heroin addiction, we're discussing the epidemic of opiate addiction in this country, not just street heroin, but prescription medication addiction, Vicodin, OxyContin, that class of drugs. We want your calls. 1-800-549-2937. Lots of St. Augustine listeners on the line today. Edward, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Great show.
Thank you.
The elephant that's in the room that hasn't been talked about is it's about supply and demand. These urgent care centers are popping up everywhere, right next to the gambling centers, and you go in there because you're in pain. They're not going to set a bone for you. They're going to give you drugs. Our current governor's wife owns a big, huge corporation that is part of this whole thing. These things are available everywhere. If you innocently go in because you strained your back or hurt yourself somehow, they're going to give you drugs. They're everywhere, and it's not going away. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And the thing is, these doctors take a Hippocratic oath. It's really a hypocritic oath because these doctors are at these facilities writing prescriptions, willy-nilly. You can go right now and say your back hurts, and they will write you a prescription in any one of these places, all over Florida. Thank you,
Edward. Kelly, Attorney General Pam Bondi has been trying to crack down on pill mills in the state of Florida, people that are running these medications out of storefronts. But what about the other issue the caller brings up? When a doctor with seemingly good intentions prescribes you this type of med, and some people do go on to become addicted to it.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit maybe about how we got in this situation. Starting back in the mid-1980s, the World Health Organization kind of started sounding the alarm of the undertreatment of chronic pain being a public health crisis. And about a decade or so later, the American Pain Society and the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations started touting pain being added as a fifth vital sign. So now that when you go into a physician's office or a healthcare facility, you're not also checked for your four vital signs of blood pressure, pulse, temperature, breath, but also you're asked about your pain. Those first four vital signs can be objectively measured. The fifth one, we've created a national rating scale. You may have seen it on a 1 to 10 scale, how do you feel? And sometimes it's a smiley face that has progressive distortions. And when you have this heightened awareness of the undertreatment of pain, coupled with the introduction of a new class of blockbuster drugs, the most popular of which is OxyContin, these time-release, long-acting opiate analgesics that, in the case of OxyContin, contained more active ingredient of oxycodone than anything else on the take-home market. And the manufacturers had an aggressive marketing campaign to the medical community. Mm-hmm. And the medical community, a whole generation of them were educated that these drugs were less addictive when prescribed in the context of pain. And we've come to find out
that's just not true. When I was in college, this was the late 80s, they took out my wisdom teeth. And back then, what they gave you was straight up codeine. Mm-hmm. That's what they gave me, mm-hmm. 3 weeks worth mm-hmm. over my winter break. Mm-hmm. I remember vividly taking that medication and being high as a kite. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I don't have the gene, that mm-hmm. When the pills ran out, that was it for me. I didn't go out and seek more of it. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. I just don't have that gene. Mm-hmm. Let's go to John in Brunswick, Georgia. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Great, thanks.
I just wanted to touch on the whole prescription scam thing. I'm a recovering addict, and when I need attention from medical professionals, I always tell them that right out front, and they work with me and give me meds that are not dangerous to me. And I just think that that last caller gave doctors a bad rap, because they will work with you, and they know what's going on, and they're not just trying to get people strung out,
Yeah, and
I think it's
John. Tell us a little bit more about your journey.
Well, I messed around with heroin as a young man up in New York State, and got myself in an addiction mode. And back then, they used to give methadone free in clinics if you tested positive for opiates, and it was hell getting off the methadone it was almost worse than the heroin. Hmm. So, but I got into recovery not too long ago, actually. But now, with the help of a 12-step program and a good network, like one of your colleagues was talking about, you know, it's much easier. And I really believe in the 12 steps. And anybody that's struggling, if they just try NA or AA, they will find the way back.
Thank you, John, and good luck. That's John up in Brunswick. The 12 steps are tried and true, of course, but Gina and Kelly, your final messages to our listeners about where people can go for more information and support.
Mm-hmm. So Lakeview obviously has a local presence here in the Jacksonville area and can be a resource for folks who are seeking a higher level of care for their addiction or mental health issues. And to get in touch with us, you can visit us online at lakeviewhealth.com. We also have a 24/7 call center where you can call us at any time. That number is 800-884-1727. And if anybody has any additional questions, they can always reach out to us online through our online website.
And Kelly, the Skeeter Hawk experiment will be part of One Spark.
We hope. We hope to get matched with a venue for, but people to please visit our website at skeeterhawk.org, our Facebook page, like us, look at our Dragonfly Revival video that's out there on social media. Also, we're working with the Duval County Public Schools Parent Academy on an event that will happen at UNF on April 5th, targeting particularly parents on how to recognize the signs of medication misuse in their children and equipping them with skills on how to cope with that and where to find treatment.
Thanks so much for sharing all of this. We appreciate it.
Thank you.